Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's June the 20th. We are in Megillas Rus. And we are up to, in the first chapter, we're up to Pasuk Zion, verse 7. Last time we discussed what the plan of Elimelech was and how it failed, and he died and his sons died, and leaving Naomi and her two daughters-in-law. She left from the place that she was there, and her two daughters-in-law were with her, and she went on the road to return to the land of Yehuda. The Gemara says over here on the words Vateitse mina makom asher hayta shama, she left the place that she was there, which obviously if a person is traveling and they go somewhere else, then they must have left the place where they were. So the Gemara here makes the same observation it makes with the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, when Yaakov leaves Eretz Yisrael. It says, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Yaakov left Be'er Sheva. Vayela Charan, and he went to Charan, when he went to Laban's house. There also, there's no need to say Yaakov left Be'er Sheva. Obviously, if he went to Charan, he was no longer in Be'er Sheva. So the Gemara makes the same observation about both Naomi and Yaakov. I guess we'll say Yaakov first and then Naomi, which is that both of them were great tzaddikim, great righteous people, and therefore when they left, the place that they left diminished in stature. Where while they were there, they provided a great sense of a great spiritual level to the places that they were. When they left, those levels declined dramatically. And that's why both the Torah and Parshas Vayetze and here the Megillah emphasizes that they left. And that diminished the place where they were. Now that means that Naomi is considered a tzadekes. She's considered a great righteous woman despite the fact that she was involved in this plan of Elimelech. This also shows us, or it's another indication, that Elimelech was in fact himself a tzaddik. This was not a situation where people, Elimelech, his wife, the two children, were overtly doing something terribly wrong. This was a subtlety that great people made a mistake and suffered tremendous consequences because of their mistake, as we explained last time. Pesachas, verse 8. Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, Lech na shovna, go back, return, ishalaveis ima, each woman to the house of her mother, Yaz Hashem imachem chesed, Hashem should do with you kindness, kasher asisem im hameisim v'imadi, as you did kindness with those who passed away, and with me. So Naomi here tells them to go back to Moab, go back to their families, and Hashem should do chesed with them to repay them for the chesed that they did with her and with those who passed away, with her boys and with her father, with her husband. Yitain Hashem lachem, Hashem should give to you umitzana menucha, you should find not peace, a tranquility. What's that?
This one says contentment.
Isha beis isha. Each woman with the house of her husband. In other words, you should find another husband. Vatishak lahen, and she kissed them. Vatisena kolan, and they lifted their voices. Vativkena, and they cried. Vatomarna la, and they said to her, Ki itach nashuv le'ameich, we will return with you to your nation. So they refuse to follow Naomi's advice to go back to their families and to find another husband within Moab. Rather, they say, we will return with you to your nation. Vatomer Nami, Nami said to them, Shovna v'nosai, go back, my daughters. Lama seilach na'imi, why should you go with me? Ha'od li vanim b'me'ai, do I have more sons in my insides? V'ayu lachem la'anoshim, and they will be for you as husbands? In other words, do I have any more boys to be born that could be your husbands? Shovna v'nosai lechna, go back, my daughters, go. Kizalkanti mios le'ish, because I am too old to be to a man. I can't produce children anyway. Ki amarti yeshli stikva, even if I were to say that I have hope, in other words, that I have the ability to produce more children, gam ha'isi ha'layla le'ish, even if I were tonight to be to a man, if I would get married tonight, v'kam yolada tivonim, even if I were now to produce more sons, ha'lohen tisaberna ada she'yigdolu, will you... How do they translate to Sabirna?
Tarry for them.
Okay, will you linger? Will you wait until they get older, until they grow? Halahain te agena, will you be fenced in? What did I say there?
Tied down.
Okay. Livilti hayos l'ish, not to be to another husband? Are you going to wait until these boys grow up? Even if I, first of all, I'm too old. I can't have any more children. And even if I had hope and I would marry tonight and I would actually conceive and have boys in 9 months from now, are you going to wait for them to grow up and not marry anybody else? Al benosai, don't, my daughters. Ki mar li ma'od mikem, for it is more bitter for me than it is for you. Ki yatzavi yad Hashem, for the hand of Hashem has gone out against me. So she tells them, there is no reason, no point in you coming back with me. There is nothing for you if you come back with me. You will never have another husband from me. And of course we know the result. Vatisena kolan vativkena od. They lifted their voice and they cried more. Vatishak arpa lachamosa. And arpa kissed her mother-in-law. It doesn't say explicitly, and she went back, but that's what it means. She kissed her and then she went back. Verus dav kaba. But Ruth cleaved to her and would not leave her. Even after her first statement here about how there's no more boys for you to marry, nevertheless, Ruth did not want to go back. This emphasizes the point we made last week, which is that the plan was for children of Elimelech and Naomi to marry girls from Moab to produce the Mashiach, to produce the line of King David. And that was the whole idea. And had there still been any hope for that, meaning even after the deaths of Elimelech, Mahlon, and Kilion, had there been more boys, then perhaps the plan still might have had a chance. It could have waited. Maybe if Naomi would have had a couple of other boys who were, let's say, 10, 12 years old, so wait a few years, maybe they'll be able to marry them, and they'll be able to carry on the plan. But Naomi says, it's over. There's nothing left. I don't have any more boys, and I'm not capable of having any more boys. And even if I were capable of having any more boys, you can't wait for them. It's too long. Forget it. It's done. It's over. There's no reason to follow me back to Israel. Therefore, Arpa kisses her mother-in-law and goes back, and Ruth does not. Test about 15. Vatomer. So Naomi said, Hine shava yivimtech el ama ve'el Eloheha. Behold, your co-wife has returned to her nation and to her God. Shuvi achare yivimtech. Go back after your co-wife. Or not your co-wife, excuse me, your sister-in-law. It's not a co-wife, right, it's a sister-in-law. Vatomer Rus, and Rus said, Al tifki ivi. Do not pester me. How do they translate?
Urge me,
okay. Li'azveich, to leave you, la'shuv me'achareich, to go back from behind you. Ki al asher t'elchi eileich, for where you go, I will go. U'v'asher t'alini alin, where you sleep, I will sleep. Ameich, ami, your nation is my nation. Ve'lokayich elokay, your God is my God. Ba'asher t'amus yamus, where you die, I will die. V'sham ekaver, and there I will be buried. Kol ya'aseh Hashem li, so Hashem should do to me, v'chol yosif, and more, he should do even more to me. In other words, he should do all kinds of terrible things to me if I don't do what I'm saying right now. Ki ha'maves yafrid b'ni uv'neich, for only death will separate between me and between you. So there we have Rus's insistence that she will go on. This is a very famous quote of Rus. We will delve into it quite extensively in a few minutes. Vatera ki misametsa si lalecha sita. So she, Naomi, saw that she, Rus, was insistent on going with her. Vatechdal l'daberei lahasha. See, she stopped speaking to her. She stopped trying to discourage her. Okay. We have much to cover tonight. I hope we're able to cover all of it. We have to understand what is this give and take, this exchange between Naomi and Rus and Arpah. We have to understand why Arpah first ignored Naomi and went along with her, but then went back after Naomi added more to her argument. And we have to understand why Rus continued on. We also have to understand some of the laws of conversion, since we learn much of the laws of conversion from here. And we also have to understand, and I mentioned this to you in the previous week, that this is a very, very important point in the Megillah of Rus, which is, what was the status of Rus and Arpah when Mahlon and Kilion married them? Were they Jewish or not? Did Rus and Arpah convert prior to Mahlon and Kilion marrying them? Or did Rus convert later and Arpah never converted? That's another issue which has to be understood. So we're going to tackle all those issues at the same time, going through this story step by step. They start going back, leaving Moab, and going back to Eretz Israel, to Eretz Yehuda. Naomi says to her daughters-in-law, why, as I mentioned before, there's no point in you coming back with me. Well, first she says, go back, each woman to her mother's house. Hashem should do with you kindness, as you did with the deceased and with me. Now, what kindness did Rus and Arpah do with the deceased? And what kindness did Rus and Arpah do with Naomi? We know that Rus is about to do incredible kindness for Naomi. But at this point in the story, what have they done in kindness for Mahlon and Kilion, and maybe Elimelech, and for Naomi?
Bury them and to bury them.
Okay.
And they comforted her.
Tat Shiva.
Okay. Okay. So comforted her.
Comforted
okay.
Her, yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe didn't speak badly about their husbands.
Okay. Okay.
They gave Naomi support. They also probably took care of their husbands while they were ill.
Okay. Good. So the Navi doesn't tell us exactly what they did, but we can, putting ourselves into a situation where, thinking through a situation where first a head of a household dies and then the two husbands die, the children, we can imagine that there was probably illness. There was also, as we mentioned last time, that all their money was lost. So there was also financial difficulties going on. And people needed to be taken care of. There was sickness. There was death. So that means there's funeral arrangements. There's Shiva. There's comforting Naomi, who has lost her husband and her boys. After all, Rus and Arpah did lose their husbands, but they're not blood relatives. So they lost their father-in-law and their husbands. They don't have any children from these husbands. They are apparently still eligible women, because Naomi says to them, go back and find husbands. Go to your mothers and then find husbands. So evidently they did show chesed for at least Mahlon and Kilion, perhaps even Elimelech, and also for Naomi. Chesed is the theme of the Megillah of Rus. Chesed is going to be the recurring theme in this Megillah. Those who demonstrate chesed will be those who rise to the top, And those who don't demonstrate chesed are those who will fall to the side. We've already pointed out last week that Elimelech's mistake was leaving rather than staying behind. And although he had a very good reason for leaving, and his leaving was ultimately for the sake of the people because he thought it would end the famine to go to Moab, nevertheless, he still did not stay there in the trenches and deal with all the needs of the people. Contrast that to Boaz, who Chazal credit with the act of ending the famine through his prayer, through his kindness, through his taking care of the people. We're going to find that the self-sacrifice for chesed that Ruth does and that Boaz does makes them rise to the top as personifying what it means to do chesed, to do kindness. That the kindness a person shows means, every time a person shows real kindness, real chesed, it means losing something from oneself. A true chesed means I give up something for somebody else. And Ruth and Boaz are going to demonstrate this just almost indescribable levels of chesed, which is why they will be the ancestors of David HaMelech. Because ultimately, I mentioned this to you before, Malchus, royalty, has to stand for chesed. Of all the crowns that we have in the Jewish people, the crown of Torah, which is scholarship, the crown of Kuhuna, of the priesthood, which is Avoda, which is service of Hashem, and then there's the crown of Malchus. Malchus is royalty. That is the crown of Chesed. And therefore, Megillas Ruth is all about Chesed. Here we have an explicit mention of Chesed, which is not detailed, which is that Naomi says to Ruth and to Arpah, you are both, including Arpah, you are both Balos Chesed. You both have demonstrated significant acts of kindness where you've given up for others. You both gave up for the deceased and you both gave up for me. And Hashem should repay you for that, because chesed is going to be repaid by Hashem no matter what. We see therefore that when Machlon and Kilion married Rus and Arpah, they didn't just marry royal blood, daughters of Eglon, the king, who we talked about last time. They also married women who personified chesed. This again fits into what we mentioned last time, that they were looking for the mothers of the Davidic line. Those who were fit to be the Moab good bird that would join the line of Yehuda, of Peretz, which would produce David HaMelech, King David. That would have to be women who personified chesed. They did personify chesed. And therefore, Naomi says to them, you did great chesed, but the plan failed. Evidently, we were wrong, but your chesed doesn't go to waste. Go back, and Hashem should repay your chesed. How will He repay your chesed? Hashem will give you minucha, He will give you contentment, and He will give you new husbands. He will assist you in finding new husbands, and you will be fine in Moab. And she kissed them, and they cried, but they refused to go back. They wanted to stay with Naomi. Yeah.
If they had already converted, can they go back?
Okay, that is a major question. And the major question over here is that if they already did convert, how does Naomi send them back? But hold on to the question. Okay, I have to ask everybody, hold your questions, because we really have to develop this further. let's move along over here. So they insist they're going to go back with her to her nation. Now, going back to her nation means we're going to leave behind Moab. Let us now emphasize this point. A Moab person in Israel is absolutely and completely out of place. There is nobody else from Moab in Israel. It's not like that if they would come back with Naomi to Israel, they'll find other Moabite converts. There are no other Moabite converts to find. Not only that, but Moab and Bnei Yisrael are enemies.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like each other. So it's true they could convert and come back, or maybe they already converted and come back, but they would not be welcomed with open arms because they represent a nation that has dealt very harshly with the Jewish people. You know, today, in 2012, we have German converts amongst our people. And we do welcome them because they are converts. But I would imagine that in 1946, it would have been very difficult for people, even though there's a mitzvah, to welcome a convert. I think it would have been very difficult for people to welcome a German convert because of what they put us through. Now, Moab didn't put the Jews through that same degree of terrible things that the Germans did, but there was animosity. And it wasn't simple for a Moab convert to come back to Israel. More than that, if you came back to Israel from Moab, it's not like you were able to call your mother every day. And it wasn't even like you could send letters home to your mother every day. If you came to Israel from Moab, that was it. You were no longer going to be welcomed back in Moab, and you were not going to be so welcomed in Israel. You were really ostracizing yourself. They say, no, we are going to go back with you to your nation. We understand what's happening over here. We're losing our nationhood of Moab, and we are going to go back with you to your nation. This was fully understood what they were doing. This was not some sort of fantasy that they had that, oh, everything will be good. They understood what was going on. This was chesed. The chesed being that we are going to stick with you, Naomi. But Naomi then pushes her insistence that they go back to a higher level. And now she points out the stark reality. She says, okay, look, you want to come back with me, I get it. I get you want to come back with me. But there's no point. There's no point. Because if you come back with me, there is nothing that you can have. No one is going to marry you, and I can't produce anybody else to marry you. You're coming back with me, essentially, to just be with me, but that's it. There's no future if you come back with me. It's not like, okay, you want to say you'll come back, you won't have your families from Moab, and you won't be fully accepted in the Jewish people. Okay, you'll marry somebody and you'll produce a family. At least you'll have your family. You won't even have a family. You'll have nothing. You'll have cut yourselves off from your previous family. You're coming back with me. I'm going to die eventually. And that's it. You'll have nothing. You will be completely alone. And there's no future. So don't come back. And she's begging them. She's saying, look, she says, Albinosai in Yud Gimel 13. Don't, my daughters, I am more bitter even than you. For the hand of Hashem is against me. What are you going to cleave to me for? You think there's some gain in cleaving to me? You think that through me, at least you are closer to Hashem? Hashem has struck me down. Hashem is unhappy with my choices. I'm not the person you want to join with. You're not gaining anything. You're much better off going back. They cry out, they raise their voices, they cry out, and Arpa finally relents, and she goes back. Now, Arpa going back is it's not astonishing. It is, we have to understand that she was tearing her heart out. Arpa was very, very torn. On the one hand, she is a Ba'alas Chesed. She exemplifies that character trait of Chesed. So she wants to go with her mother-in-law to take care of her mother-in-law. But on the other hand, she is recognizing now that what she would need to give up in order to perform this chesed is more than she can bear. She would have to give up literally everything. She gives up all of her family in Moab, all of her nation of Moab, to come back to being in solitude, in being alone in Israel, with no money, no family, nothing. And Orpah says, I just can't do it. So although Orpah was a great Baalas Chesed, but she couldn't bring herself to this incredible act of self-sacrifice, which is to go back with Naomi. That which Ruth does do, which she pushes herself beyond all imaginable limits, and is gives up everything only to take care of her mother-in-law Naomi, Orpah can't push herself that far. The Gemara says that Orpah, upon going back, she is so decimated by her decision that the Gemara says it very dramatically. We don't need to say it as dramatically as the Gemara, but she ended up going from this lofty, lofty height of possibly being like Ruth, of going with her mother-in-law. She falls dramatically and ends up being immoral with many, many men, and even beyond that. And the Gemara explains that to go from such a lofty height and just drop, it's very, very dangerous. And a person is on such a lofty, lofty height, even if they can't push themselves that one more notch, but there is the fallout. A person has to have some way of being able to catch themselves and not drop precipitously. Because that's what happened to Orpah. Orpah is a very, very tragic story. Orpah eventually, because of her great self-sacrifice, although she didn't quite make it, she is rewarded in this world. And she is rewarded with descendants who are very, very powerful and who exemplify what this world has to offer. She has descendants, four of whom are giants. One of them is Goliath. That is, he is a descendant of Orpah along with his three brothers. They represent having everything one could want in this world. They are powerful. They are wealthy. They have it all. And they are descendants of Orpah, because Orpah is repaid, but she's repaid in this world as she stumbles, unfortunately, in a very, very dramatic way. But Ruth does not. Ruth tells her mother-in-law, I'm coming with you. I'm not going back. She cleaves to her mother-in-law. And she gives her, and Naomi tells her, but your sister-in-law went back, go to her nation and to her God. She's given it all up. Go back with her. So Ruth then says, don't pester me. And she says, I will not go back. Now, on a simple level, her speech is saying, no matter what, I'm going to stick with you. Where you go, I go. Where you sleep, I will sleep. Where your nation is my nation, your God is my God. And it's all my entire life. Wherever you die, I will die. There I'll be buried. This is it. I understand this is forever. This is not a temporary thing. I'm going with you wholeheartedly, fully. I'm jumping in the deep end. I am not turning my back. And Hashem should punish me in all kinds of ways if I don't follow through. Only death will separate me from you. So Naomi sees that Ruth is willing to put in this type of effort. She's not turning back. So Naomi says, fine. It is from here that we learn that we are to discourage converts. This is where we learned it from. That if someone comes to convert, we talked about this last week, if someone comes to convert, that our first reaction is to discourage them. It is flattering when someone who is not Jewish comes and says, I'm interested in Judaism, I'd like to be Jewish. It's flattering because we don't always get that kind of reaction about Judaism. And we like it when someone who isn't Jewish thinks highly of us to the point where they want to join us. And one can be very tempted to try to encourage them to join. But we learn from here that that is not appropriate. But the appropriate thing to do is to push away, to encourage them not to join. And it is only if the potential convert shows the willingness, shows the intense desire that Rush shows over here, that we then don't try to discourage them. That's what Nami says. Nami's Vatechdal Dabaila. She says, I no longer, she stops speaking to her, because, meaning stops trying to discourage her, because once Rush shows her great interest, then Nami does not try to discourage her and allows her to accompany her back. We will also learn more detail over here about what it is that Nami said to Rus. We only have Rus's speech, but Rus's speech is actually responding to Nami's discouragement. So the Gemara will tell us, and we'll share that with you in a moment, what it is that Nami said to Rus, which Rus is in turn responding to. Right now, Nami is telling them, you still have hope in Moab. You can go back. Your mothers will to go back to your mother's house. They're going to accept you back. And you'll even find husbands. Go back. But if they go to Israel, it's all over. Your mothers will never take you
but
back.
But so, there's a family bond there. She went back with literally nothing, but if she stayed with Naomi, she would have at least had Naomi. And
well, she went. She had nothing spiritually. She went back to her mother. I mean, she had her mother's house. And she did marry. I mean, what
she
Nami...
She didn't marry nicely.
Well, I don't know if she didn't marry nicely. She didn't marry spiritually. We have no reason to believe that she didn't lead a good life later. But I mean, her demise is much, much later. She lives a long life. Both Rus and Arpa live a very long time. Rus lives all the way to the time of Shlomo HaMelech, of King Shlomo, which Shlomo is her great-great-grandson. And Arpa is still alive in the time of David HaMelech, time of King David. She's still alive. The Gemara describes how she eventually is killed. I realize that there are things going on over here that not everybody is comfortable with, but we can't put ideas here that the Gemara does not say. Nami is never criticized for sending back Arpa. She did the right thing. And we learn from this that we are supposed to discourage them. It is correct to send her back. That was the right thing to do. She was a righteous act. She was rewarded in the next world for sending Arpa back. Arpa did not react correctly when she went back. She fell, unfortunately, precipitously. Rus, of course, in persevering, did an incredible act of kindness. But we have to be careful over here in our understanding. We have to apply what it is that our sages tell us is going on over here. We don't find anywhere over here that Nami did anything wrong. We do have to understand how she could do it if they were already Jewish. That's a major, major question. But we do learn from here that we are to discourage converts. And I want to say this because unfortunately I find that this is not done correctly. When someone walks in the door and they are not Jewish and they tell you that, oh yes, I'm interested in finding out, or I'm new to this, or whatever it is, you should give them a cold shoulder. They should not be welcome. They are not part of us, and you should not be part of making them part of us. If they persevere, they push, then they will get into a program with one of the shoals that have official programs for this purpose, and either they will make it or they won't make it. But it is not a proper thing to make them feel welcome. If it's Shabbos and they walk into shul, they should be ushered out. They don't belong in shul. Shul is for Jews. It is not for non-Jews. They're not welcome in shul. I'm not talking about when we have a situation where we have a convert who has a simcha and there's a family member. I'm not talking about something. I'm talking about where they're coming. They wandered in because they're curious. They're welcome to be curious, but they're not welcome in shul. Shul is not for them. Shul is for Jews. They're welcome to do whatever research they want on the internet, and if they want to contact one of the rabbis, which that's an appropriate thing to do, tell them to speak to Rabbi Feldman, Rabbi Freilich, that's fine. Let them do that, and they will have a conversation with them as they do, and they have their methods of discouraging and seeing how sincere they really are, etc., etc., etc. When a convert gets through that process, then we're dealing with someone who really is sincere, and then it really is a feather in the convert's cap. And an R cap. It's a wonderful thing. And of course we welcome converts with open arms. but not before they're converts. That's the issue at hand. They should not be considered part of us. They should not be considered welcome at the initial stages. They need to be pushed away. Not shoved away, but pushed away. So, first of all, what are the indications that they are Jewish already, prior to this, whole episode here? What are the indications that they are Jewish?
Because they were married to Machlon and Kilian.
Okay. So, we know that the Torah does not recognize an intermarriage. If a Jew and a non-Jew, whether it's a Jewish man and a non-Jewish woman, or a Jewish woman and a non-Jewish man, if they go through whatever process they want, whether it's a civil process or some sort of a ceremony, and they attempt to marry, we do not consider them married. We consider them to be two people who are living together but are not married. They're out of wedlock. Doesn't matter how many ceremonies they go through or how many official things they go through, it's irrelevant. They're not married, according to the Torah. So if, in fact, Ruth and Orpah were considered the wives of Machlon and Kilion, halachically considered the wives of Machlon and Kilion, then they must have been Jewish, because otherwise they wouldn't have been considered the wives. Now, do we find anywhere that they are considered the wives? I mean, it doesn't say explicitly that they... when it says that they... It says... Well, it says they married. It says the language of Merva Yisulahem, they married. More than that, at the end of the Megillah, we're going to find that Rus is referred to as Eshes Machlon, the wife of Machlon. That sounds like they were married. More than that, Nami refers to them as my daughters-in-law. My daughters, Al Ben Osai, don't my daughters. She talks of them as if they're really her daughters. And she says, your sister-in-law, Yevim Teich, your sister-in-law. She's using language, and the Navi himself calls them Kaloseha, her daughters-in-law. So it seems like familial language is being used over here, which therefore implies that there really was a conversion prior to this entire thing. What would indicate that they were not married? The primary indication that they were not converted is that Naomi sends them back. And how do you send back someone that's already converted? How do you tell someone who's already converted, already Jewish, you know, go back and worship your deity, go join your nation. I mean, go marry a non-Jewish man. I mean,
it didn't say, Bedavka said something different.
Go ahead.
Hang on a second.
She says to him, go find a husband. She says, go back to your mother's house and go find a husband.
Yeah, see that Orpah has gone back to her.
No, I understand that. But before that point, she says each woman should go back to her mother's house.
Yeah.
And you'll find a husband. Where do you find a husband? If they're Jewish, they can't marry a non-Jew.
Okay.
How do you tell them to go marry a non-Jew?
Okay.
So this is a conundrum. And the truth is, it's worse than this, because the truth is that later on, we haven't gotten to it yet, and it's too complicated to discuss it right now, but later on we're going to find all the indications of whether they were married or weren't married become much more complicated in the third and fourth chapters. So there are significant issues over here about whether they were or weren't converted, and there's all kinds of discussion about it. I'm going to offer you two approaches, and these approaches, there's different approaches offered. I'm going to offer you two approaches. One approach, that they were not yet converted prior to this episode, and one approach that they were converted prior to this episode of Naomi discouraging them. The first one is that both are going to introduce ideas that are new for everybody. The first one is not that practical, and the second one is much more practical, but you may find it a little bit uncomfortable. But it's important that we understand how these things work. The first approach is that they were not yet converted when they married Machlon and Kilion. But then the problem is, well, then how do they marry? I mean, what does that mean? So the commentaries who follow this approach point out that there is a difference amongst non-Jews depending on their approach to the seven mitzvos. We know there's a concept in the Torah called ger toshav. A ger is a convert. A ger toshav is not a convert. A ger toshav is a non-Jew. A non-Jew who has not converted at all. So what is a ger toshav? It's a non-Jew who we do not, who we permit to live amongst us in the land of Israel. When we go to Israel, there is a requirement, when Yehoshua took the people into Israel, there was a requirement to make sure that the non-Jews were no longer there. They were required to kill them if they remained behind, but they were not allowed to leave non-Jews in the land of Israel. Why? Because if you live amongst non-Jews, you learn from them. And our job is to keep the entire Torah. The non-Jews who are not keeping the Torah, then we learn from them. But non-Jews aren't required to keep the Torah. So what's wrong with a non-Jew not keeping the Torah? The answer is, there's nothing wrong with a non-Jew not keeping the Torah. But there is a problem with a non-Jew not keeping the seven laws. So a non-Jew who is not keeping the seven laws is a very bad influence on us Jews. But a non-Jew who is keeping the seven laws, that's not a bad influence. We can all understand that that non-Jew is not required to keep Shabbos. That non-Jew is not required to keep kosher. That's fine. But that non-Jew is required to believe in one God. And that non-Jew is required to not steal and not kill and not eat flesh that's been torn from a live animal. So, and to live morally as well. So, we do not want to live amongst non-Jews, if we are able to control this, we do not want to live amongst non-Jews who don't keep the seven laws. But we have no problem living amongst non-Jews who do keep the seven laws. A ger toshav, not only do they have the privilege of living amongst Jews, a ger toshav also is accorded many privileges that are normally only accorded to Jews. We have many laws in the Torah that only apply to Jews. For example, don't take revenge. It doesn't say that. It says don't take revenge against your fellow Jew. Right? You shall love your fellow like yourself. You shall love your fellow Jew like yourself. Almost all of those laws, all of the interpersonal laws that we have, are only amongst Jews. Those laws do not apply between Jews and non-Jews. Now, I am not suggesting that we should mistreat non-Jews. You know that I don't believe in that type of behavior. But it's not a law in the Torah to treat a non-Jew the same way that we're expected to treat each other. However, a ger toshav, a non-Jew who is doing what he should be doing, which is keeping the seven laws, is accorded most of those rules. Most of those rules that apply between ourselves apply when we're dealing with a non-Jew who is properly keeping the seven mitzvos. That's a ger toshav. The question is, could a Jew marry a ger toshav? Is that allowed or not? Is that permitted or not? Well, interestingly, this is a difference of opinion, which means as follows. Today, it is certainly prohibited. You can't marry, no one can marry a non-Jew under any circumstances. It's certainly prohibited. But the Gemara describes that there were certain laws, there were certain laws of intermarriage which are from the Torah, and then there were other laws of intermarriage which were added by various courts as the people faced greater and greater challenges. The most recent, one of the most recent decrees by a court of law was the court of the Chashmonaim, of the Hanukkah story. Mm-hmm. You can imagine during the Hanukkah story how rampant intermarriage was because of all the Hellenists. We had so many Jews who were leaving our faith and joining with the Greeks, and there was incredible intermarriage at that time. The Chashmonai court saw the need to strengthen the law of remaining apart from non-Jews. And they actually imposed many laws which keep us apart from non-Jews. They also strengthen the law of intermarriage. Those who say, now be careful over here, some say that from the Torah it's prohibited for a Jew to marry a ger toshav, a non-Jew who keeps the seven laws. Others say that it is permitted, but the Chashmonai court then prohibited it. So today it's for sure prohibited. It doesn't make a difference how we understand it. Today it's prohibited. The question is, what about in the time of Rus and Arpa? If it is prohibited from the Torah, then that doesn't help Rus and Arpa either. It would have been prohibited to marry them, even though they kept the seven laws. But if it is not prohibited from the Torah, it was only prohibited later by the Chashmonai court, then in the time of Rus and Arpa it was permitted. This approach suggests that it was permitted in the time of Rus and Arpa to marry a non-Jew who adheres to the seven laws. Rus and Arpa did adhere to the seven laws, therefore it was permitted for Machlon and Kilion to marry them, and it was a marriage, but they weren't yet Jewish. Which is why, when they want to go back with Rus to Israel, with Nami to Israel, and there they want to convert fully, that's where Nami says, don't do it, go back. And it's perfectly acceptable to tell them to go back, because they're not Jewish yet. So it's fine, go back and marry a Moav man. They can marry a Moav man, why not? They're not Jewish. That would be this approach. So this approach is a novel idea, with this concept of a non-Jew that keeps the seven laws. As I said, it's not applicable today, but it would help explain how things worked then and fitting in all the pieces of the Rus and Arpa story. Yes?
But what if they had had children? If the whole purpose of all this was to have children that would...
Good. That's a very good question.
I mean, the children wouldn't be Jewish if they were here.
Ostensibly not. Ostensibly
they
would not be Jewish. That's a very good question. That's an excellent question, actually. Very good. I don't have an answer for you. It's a very good question. The other approach is that they were converted by Machlon and Kilion. Now, to understand this approach, and I told you, this is going to be a little bit uncomfortable, but you got to hear it through. So please hold your questions to the end. We need to understand, first of all, what the Rambam, Maimonides, writes. The Rambam writes, he says, Chas v'shalom, God forbid, it should not enter anyone's mind that Shimshon, Samson, or Shlomo, Solomon, married non-Jews. He said, of course not. It is obvious and clear that they converted the women that they married. That means Shimshon converted Delilah, and Shlomo converted the daughter of Paro and all the other foreign wives who he married. The Rambam says this is clear and obvious. We don't even need to discuss it. Obviously, the great tzaddikim, the great righteous people, Shlomo and Shimshon, would not have married non-Jews. They obviously converted their wives. So he says, but we find that in the verses themselves, and then even more so in the Gemara, Tzugezunt, they are accused of marrying non-Jews. So, what's that about? So the Rambam writes, you have to understand, says the Rambam, that as we've talked about this many times, that when the great ones sin, the Torah and the Gemara will magnify their sin and take something which is a very subtle thing and point out the real problem and make it very large. The Rambam writes, there are converts and there are converts. There are converts who are sincere, mm-hmm, and who are righteous and who are a gem and a jewel, both in and of themselves and for the Jewish people, and are cherished by Hashem and by the Jewish people. And then there are converts who unfortunately aren't so sincere and aren't so committed and unfortunately bring trouble to themselves, because until now they were only obligated to do seven things, now they're obligated in 613 things that they're not doing, and they bring trouble to the Jewish people, and it's not great. There are converts there, and there are converts. Says the Rambam, when Shimshon converted the wives that he married, and when Shlomo converted the wives that he married, although they were conversions, and they were halakhically acceptable conversions, but those converts ended up, as we see, he writes, you see from the end of the story, that they were obviously not fully committed and not fully sincere. And therefore, those conversions were not the best conversions. People on the level of Shimshon and Shlomo, writes the Rambam, should have done a better job in discerning who they were converting. And therefore, they are accused of marrying non-Jews. They didn't marry non-Jews, but they married people who should have remained non-Jews. That's what the Rambam writes. The Rambam goes on and writes further. Listen very carefully. The Rambam writes further. He doesn't address Machlon or Kilya, but this is what he writes further. He says, this is why, when things are going really, really well for the Jews, like in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, meaning after he became very, very powerful, and other times when things were going really well for the Jews, that we did no longer accepted converts. Because, I mentioned this to you last week, because those converts, there's no way of knowing whether they're sincere or not. Because if being Jewish means power, money, fame, everything you want, so then who wouldn't want to be Jewish? That doesn't prove any kind of sincerity. That doesn't prove any kind of commitment. So they stopped accepting converts. So the Rambam says, this is fascinating, the Rambam says, but you realize that to convert someone, you don't need three rabbis. You don't need three learned men. You don't even need three leaders of the people. All you need is a court of law. A court of law is three Jewish males who keep the Torah. That's all you need. Which means any three observant male Jews. Go upstairs on a Shabbos morning, look around at the Kiddush, and you'll see dozens and dozens and dozens of people who are eligible to be one of the three people on a court that converts someone from being non-Jewish to being Jewish. It works. It may not be the best, but it does work. So writes the Rambam, in those times when things were going really well for the Jews, and the high court and all of the sages would not accept converts for fear that they weren't really sincere, but he writes, based in Shelhadyotos, the simple people, meaning the lay people, went ahead and did do conversions. And he writes, many, many, many people converted during those times, but not with the consent of the leadership and the sages. It was regular people who thought they were doing a good thing by offering conversion, and they did. And therefore, many people converted. It's somewhat similar to what goes on today. Somewhat similar.
At what time was this?
This was in the time of Shlomo and other times that things were going really well for the Jewish people. Yeah.
Okay.
So the Rambam says, what happened to those people? What was the status of those people? They were converts. They were officially, halakhically converts. But it wasn't clear how sincere they were. Now, what happens if you have a convert who joins the Jewish people who turns out to be not sincere and ends up not keeping the laws properly? It does not undermine the conversion. The conversion is still a good conversion. Unfortunately, it brings great sin upon the person's head and upon our heads. Worse than that, is that person a good influence or a bad influence? That person is a bad influence. For that matter, any Jew who says, I don't care about the Torah, is also a bad influence. All those people are bad influences. Let's talk about our fellow Jews for a minute. We welcome all our fellow Jews. We want all our fellow Jews to be exposed to Torah and to the beauty of Yiddishkeit. But if a Jew openly comes in and says, forget the Torah, Torah is a terrible thing, and openly defies everything and has a chip on their shoulder, we don't invite them in. That's not a good influence. That's not a situation that's helpful. There we say, hey, listen, come back when you're ready to have a decent attitude. But a bad attitude is not somebody that we bring into our homes. That's not a good thing. We don't want our children exposed to that. We don't want to be ourselves exposed to that. That's a bad thing. A convert who turns out to be insincere is no different. A convert is no different than a Jew who's walking around doing terrible things and not keeping the Torah and actually defying the Torah openly. That's not a good thing. The Rambam writes that those converts who were converted by the lay people without any guidance, what did the sages do with them? The sages kept them at arm's length. And the sages said, let's see. Each individual was judged and treated independently. If one of them emerged as someone who was actually sincere and a wonderful person and wanted to learn more and be more observant and do things properly, they were welcomed with open arms. But if the person clearly emerged as someone who really couldn't care less, someone who wasn't interested, someone who would ridicule the Torah, then they were sent away. But they're Jewish! They are Jewish. But even a Jew who's ridiculing the Torah is better off not being amongst us. If they're ridiculing, we don't welcome them, because then you're causing more problems than help. We only accept people in the community when we are influencing them, not when they are influencing us. Rus and Arpa were converted. They were converted according to this approach prior to this whole episode with Naomi. They were converted by Machlon and Kilion. But were they 100% sincere or not? We don't know. Mrs. Lewis is ready to ask a bomb question, which is, where was the Beis Din?
Yeah, right.
Good question.
It takes 3 feet.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's an excellent question.
To convert someone in order to marry.
That's a great question. That's a great, great question. But hold on. But according to this approach, they were converted prior by Machlon and Kilion, but it wasn't yet clear whether they were truly sincere. Naomi here is putting them through the test. Just how sincere were you when you converted? When Arpa demonstrates that she was not so sincere, she's sent away. And that's not improper. Our question was, how do you send away someone who's Jewish? The answer is, the Rambam says, you do send away someone who's Jewish when that person is going to be a bad influence. And here, Naomi's way of discouraging them was to discover this point. According to this approach, one would have to understand that Arpa really demonstrated insincerity, not just that she, like I described before, that she couldn't get over that last hump, but actually Naomi saw within Arpa that she would have been a bad influence. While Rus, when she showed that she was a good influence and that she was sincere and she wanted to learn more, then she stopped pushing her away. But she didn't need to convert her. She already was converted according to this approach. Those are the two approaches. Now, I'll get to your question in a minute. Mrs. Lewis is asking a great question, which I don't have a very good answer for, which is, you need 3 men who are Jewish, who are practicing Jews, who are not related to each other, to be a court. I forgot that point. Right. So how do they convert them? So according to this approach, we would have to say either that there were other members of the household with them, that they brought with them, not slaves, because slaves are not able to be on a court of law, but they could have had hired help that were with them, other Jews who worked for them, you know, let's say, you know, stable boys or whatever it is, who could have, as long as they were adult male Jews who kept the Torah, they could be on the court. Or somehow they got a hold of another 3 men. It's a good question. But it's not like it's an impossible thing to answer. But I don't have a clear answer.
Converting someone in order so that they get married.
That is also not normally done. Normally that is not acceptable. But it works. See, that's the thing. The Rambam might say as well. The halacha is, if a person is converted because they want to marry someone, it works. You're not supposed to do it. It's wrong to do it, but it does work. In the end, it works. So according to this, they would have been converted, but not the greatest type of conversion. And when it's not the greatest type of conversion, Naomi still has the right to see who needs to be sent away and who can continue on. There's 3 things. There's someone who converts perfectly and with sincerely and all that. That we know. Those are the converts we love and cherish and we want them. Then we have those who don't convert properly. That would be that they convert it with, let's say, with a conservative conversion or a reform conversion. That's not a good conversion. They're not Jewish. It doesn't work. We're not talking about that over here. Here we're talking about a middle ground where it is a halachically acceptable conversion, but it's not optimal. They're not really sincere. They're not really there. They're not really there. You know, and then in the end, we see they weren't really interested in the first place. But they are Jewish. The conversion works.
The conversion works.
Yeah, okay. They're Jewish.
Yeah. Okay. And this person is observant, then that the conversion did work.
Yeah. You know, it always, the conversion works. It's not retroactively no good. It is good. Perhaps next time we'll begin with a little bit more of a clear discussion of how a conversion actually works. What works, what doesn't work, what's optimal, what's not optimal. Perhaps we'll start next week with that. Anyway, we still have to cover what was Naomi saying to discourage Rus. We didn't really cover that yet.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the Donate link. Thank you very much.